Okay, so today is Palm Sunday. It's the beginning of Holy Week leading up to Easter next Sunday. And we're approaching a time of year where we might become curious about how we are being shaped through the gifts and challenges of our journey. Many of us, I think, have been taught that it's completely up to us to change ourselves, that we need to be proactive and make a lot of effort to transform. And when we make those big efforts, it often seems like things have changed, right? Have you ever had something you're like, oh, I'm really going to pray hard and get accountability and read a bunch of books? And like for a while, it kind of like seems to work, right? But then sometimes you find out after a while, oh, maybe I didn't change as much as I thought. And I think this is why it's often so disappointing when those things we thought we dealt with come back. Yet sometimes our deepest change is the changes that sneak up on us. So I was pondering this week some of the small changes in my life that have made a big difference, like discovering that fresh vegetables actually taste good. Like, I don't know if you're raised on canned vegetables or no vegetables or frozen, which are still fine, by the way, no shame. But like fresh vegetables actually, like I find myself kind of starting to crave them, which is really weird. Or the value of protecting your sleep. Like my son is in college right now, and he had a roommate that was waking him up every night about 3 in the morning, like shouting at his video game. And I realized from the advice I gave him that I really care about sleep, because my son just laughed and said, I don't think I'm going to do those things. It'll probably get me arrested. Like I was like, just take his computer apart when he's not there and take like an important piece out, you know, or something. It's a bad idea. Might have mentioned an airsoft gun. I don't know. It's like really terrible. But you just don't mess with sleep. Or when I learned that if you dip cookies in milk, they taste really good. Unless you're lactose intolerant, which then learning that might have been the really important difference for you and others in your journey. Or that simply resting, sorry. It's on my mind because they made Game of Thrones Oreos and I saw them at the grocery store. That's my only reference to that, but I just wanted to, it's on my mind. So I'm so proud you're here this morning. But also, like one of the simplest things is just that I've realized the last few years is seeing that just simply learning how to rest in God's presence can actually soothe your nervous system and begin to rewire your brain. So I wanted to just take a minute and kind of reflect this morning as we start on what are some of the small changes that have made a larger impact on us over time. So here's the question just to ponder for a minute. What's a small change that's made a much larger difference than you anticipated? So maybe take a minute to reflect and then maybe share with someone sitting around you if you want to. Okay. So does anybody have like a small change they're willing to share? Anyone? What's that? Going for walks. Yeah, going for walks are kind of magical sometimes, yeah. What else? Getting a dog. You saw that as a small change? I'm sorry. I'm not shaming you. I'm sorry. That was wrong. Sorry about that. Anything else?
Drinking water.
It's kind of important. Yeah. It's good. Yeah. No coffee after 3 p.m. Does anybody have a cutoff point for coffee? Like you've learned, you just got to have one? Okay, that's good. That's awesome. I kind of want to keep going. Yeah, one more.
Saying no to the things that don't matter so you have space and room for the things that do.
Saying no to the things that don't matter so you have room and space for the things that do. Yeah, that's good. I like it. Well, we're going to reflect today on the reality that our transformation often comes to us in ways we didn't plan on. Perhaps it's present in your life right now in a way so small and different you wouldn't even expect it holds the key to your growth and freedom. This is the story that we're wading into today. It's a moment where Jesus instructs his students to call a Lyft or Uber for him when he could have called a limo, so he can make his entrance into his deepest transformation, so he can begin the final week of his life. So let's take a look together and read aloud with those sitting near you, as is our custom, from the Gospel of Luke. So Jesus is preparing to enter Jerusalem for the last time during a festival where they celebrate God liberating them from oppression and captivity. And many are wanting Jesus to be the next deliverer with whom their current oppression can be lifted. And we see in the way that Jesus shows up that our transformation comes to us in untamed ways. Jesus said to them, "Go into the village ahead of you, and as you enter it, you will find there tied a colt that has never been ridden. Untie it and bring it here." So a colt that's never been ridden, like, it could be up to 4 years old. It might be full size or nearly to it. Like, when I first read this, did you ever envision like a tiny little donkey and feel like really sorry? But no, it's probably like a full thing. Has anyone ever ridden a horse or donkey that has never been ridden? Okay, you're probably not alive. You're probably not here. This is kind of a bad idea. Sometimes the things that seem like terrible ideas end up being really important. So much of our transformation isn't recognized in the moment. Like, no one could have convinced them, "Hey, actually look on the bright side, this is going to be really good." You know how sneaky Jesus is about doing things that you don't expect. He's just like sandbagging or something. The donkey is the better move. Like, nobody could have convinced them of that. And it got me thinking this week, have you ever been confused or in pain and had people try to say things that actually made it worse? Or been the person to say something that made it worse, even though you know better? You don't have to raise your hand, but I think this is why the cliches are often so unhelpful, because it's forcing us to connect meaning before we're ready or before the meaning has naturally emerged. Jesus' students are at a certain point in their meaning process, and that was honored. And this is why I really love the framework that we use here with our children's work at Vox. It's built around a curriculum called Godly Play. And I'm going to, in a couple places today, just nerd out just a little bit. So if I lose you, just hold on, because it'll come back around. This was developed by Jerome Berryman, and he talks about meaning making for children and adults in terms of the process of creativity, and that process needs to be respected. So I thought it'd be kind of neat to look at his map as a way to locate Jesus's students on the journey to Easter this week. Does that make sense? So he says that the creative process is the imagination in action. Like, you could take this meaning map with you into the week if you wanted to keep reading in the Gospels this week and see how their world comes apart and is reformed and how it all begins with this donkey. So what he would say is that new meaning starts with an opening. It comes through a crisis or through wonder. Like, something tragic or hard happens and it breaks open how we used to think of the world. Or we just get curious and we begin to wonder, why is that the way it is? Why have I always thought this way? And this, for the disciples, probably came when Jesus told them, "Go get me a donkey instead of a horse, and a donkey that's never been ridden." And eventually then this would give way to insight, which is like a shift. Have you ever had like an aha moment, but you're not quite sure what it is yet? You just know that something is changing from this kind of old model of thinking to something new, from the inadequate frame for a meaning to a renewed way of looking at the world. So as their wonder marinates on their journey to go get this colt, this insight is felt. They're just beginning to sense Jesus' purpose may be different than they thought. And then this gives way to scanning, which is a period of increased tension. We're sensing the old world, the old won't work any longer, but you don't see the new yet. It's usually a time of chaos and discomfort, and for many of us, it's intolerable. Some of us try to live with the old meaning that has been broken and pretend it still works. So right now, I bet they're like, donkey's kind of a weird choice. But okay, it's fine, it's fine. As long as he kills all the Romans when we get there. If he wants to do it on a donkey, that's cool. But they're kind of, you know, kind of puzzled. Like it's the beginning of some unraveling, right? And the tension over the next week becomes unbearable for Jesus' friends as they, to the point to where they abandon him, when they see that he's not going to use force, but he's going to actually receive the violence. And that causes them to just check out and move back into their old pattern of thinking, their old jobs. But if we can stay in it and let go, this leads us to articulation. And it's a way of working out the insight into language. It brings our experience into community, and it's vulnerable. Like we'll see in the coming days and passages, there's slow realization and languaging of Jesus' real purpose, to bring good news from a place of vulnerability rather than a place of power. And then finally, we're invited to exercise a will to closure. At some point, we need to just say good enough for now and bring closure to the process in order to create new meaning. When I was a philosophy major, like one of the hardest things is you're being exposed to all these different ways of seeing reality. And I had so many students and friends that got really depressed because just everything was being deconstructed, and there wasn't a rebuilding. So a lot of us have been deconstructing for a while. And at some point, we need to kind of pick a few fragments of what's left and say, yeah, good enough for right now, right? The new circle of meaning now sits there, waiting to be broken again by crisis or dissolved by wonder. And then the process will begin again, for this is the very stuff of life. And I think this is hard to try to lean into meaning and say this is good enough, knowing that it's going to pass, it's going to be broken down. Eventually, Jesus' scattered friends, they take in the new understanding of his death, and they form community around this hope of transformation and deep healing. And then even that gets broken open and expanded to include more and more people who are different from them. But it all starts with a donkey. So I wanted to invite us just this morning to kind of maybe reflect for a minute and be curious. Like, where are we at in this place of meaning in our lives? And I'm just going to take you through that. You might just take a minute to reflect. Has there been an opening in your life this year? Maybe a crisis, maybe something hard, or maybe just wonder. Maybe your curiosity is causing you to kind of move into new territory. It's a little bit scary. And if you've had an opening, do you feel some kind of insight coming? Like where do we feel insight that's trying to emerge? Maybe you don't have language for it, but you sense something has shifted and you don't know what it is and you don't know if it's okay. But maybe this is just part of being human. And then maybe we're starting to scan. Do you feel the tension of the old, what no longer works? And is that becoming unbearable? Because you're not sure if the new thing's going to be okay, if you're going to be okay. And then finally, have you begun to try to give language to this change in your journey? Actually, this isn't finally. There's one more. This new shape is emerging. And it's hard to talk about it. One of the things I find when I get to chat with folks at Vox a lot of times is I'll hear something like, I don't know what or if I believe anything any longer, or I don't know where I'm at. And I really love that moment because I'm like, you're in great company. We're all just kind of trying to figure it out. So like you're not the only one. Because sometimes that's what it feels like. You show up and you think, am I the only one that's not sure about all this stuff? And then eventually we're invited to this space, this will to closure, where we say good enough for now. And we begin to put our weight on it, knowing that that itself will be opened up again and changed. I remember when I realized the things I was doing to be close to God felt empty. And so the insight I had was just to step back and just like chill for a minute, because it was like, I'm trying to do all the things that I'm supposed to do. And what I found is as I was kind of trying to, as that growth moment was happening, I kept trying to imagine, though, that God was not happy with me, because that's what I was told growing up, that I was always doing something that displeased God. So in this moment, I kept trying to imagine and feel bad and like have this emotional experience. It was like catharsis almost. And what I noticed, though, as I really felt God's presence, was all that was there was acceptance. Like all that was there was God saying, I understand you in a way you don't even understand yourself. And I have complete compassion for you. Which was really hard, because then I realized, well, if God's not rejecting me, then that means I'm just rejecting myself, essentially. Which is kind of hard to, you know, make peace with. And I was putting that on God. And then I was able to start to articulate that and say, I don't know if this is okay, but I think all I know now is that there is this presence available, and it makes a lot of difference. But I used to think I knew so much more. As we participate in the meaning-making of our journey, I think we see time and again how transformation travels through metaphor. He goes on, if anyone asks you, why are you untying it? Just say this, the Lord needs it. The miraculous needed something to carry it to others. And then they brought it to Jesus, and after throwing their cloaks on the colt, they set Jesus on it. So sometimes we might read this and other scriptures and identify with the characters of the story. Like it's a way to enter into mystery and allow it to penetrate our dull senses, our fogginess and asleepness. And most years when I read the story, I identify with the donkey. Is like the ass of the story, which is kind of fitting. Like how can I be of use? How can I be an ass for the Lord? But to be less of an ass overall is the goal. But this is the language that Jesus swam in, not just profanity, but the language of hidden meaning and story. Jesus lived and breathed the language of metaphor. And I was recently introduced to a podcast that really articulated how important the language of metaphor is for our transformation. There's a really great podcast called The Hidden Brain. In recent years, there's been renewed interest in brain hemisphere research. And it's based on people who've had a stroke that's damaged like one side of the brain. And so then they're able to tell by what function you lose, kind of which hemisphere is in charge of what. And basically the left side is kind of like the detail-oriented side. Like if you were playing an event, that would be the one knowing how to set the silverware placement just right. And then the right side of the brain is in charge of like the big picture, like the whole thing, including meaning. So I want to play a clip for you. This is Shankar Vedantam interviewing Ian McGilchrist.
I want to emphasize that I resist very strongly the idea that the brain is a computer. It's just nothing like a computer, actually. But in this one limited sense, the left hemisphere is a little bit like a very, very smart computer. So you know what the data that you've collected mean, but you haven't yet been able to analyze them. You put them into a machine that is just very clever at carrying out a routine. It doesn't understand. And then it spews out a result, which it also doesn't understand. But you then take back into the world where the data come from and go, I see. So that is the relationship. Your left hemisphere is busy processing things to make sure they're consistent and unpacked, but your right hemisphere is seeing everything. I'm suggesting that we have arrived at a place, not for the first time in the West, where we have slipped into listening only to what it is that the left hemisphere can tell us and discounting what the right hemisphere could have told us.
One of the important differences you point out is sort of understanding the role of metaphor in language, for example, which is that the left hemisphere really is incapable of understanding what metaphor is or how it works.
Yes, and that's no small thing, because as some philosophers have pointed out, metaphor is how we understand everything. And they point out that actually particularly scientific and philosophical understanding is mediated by metaphors. In other words, the only way we can understand something is in terms of something else that we think we already understand. And it's making the analogy, which is what a metaphor does, that enables us to go, I see, I get it. Now, if you think that metaphor is just one of those dispensable decorations that you could add to meaning, it's kind of nice, but probably a distraction from the real meaning. You've got it upside down, because if you don't understand the metaphor, you haven't understood the meaning. Literal meaning, however, is a peripheral, diminished version of the richness of metaphorical understanding. And what we know is the right hemisphere understands those implicit meanings, those connections of meanings, what we call connotations, as well as just denotations. It understands imagery, it understands humor, it understands all of that.
Okay. That was a lot. It's worth listening to like three times. One of the things I did notice when I was in more of like a very conservative religious context is I lost my sense of humor. And so this is, to me, pretty powerful, this idea that metaphor is how we understand everything. So memorizing this passage of scripture and being able to recite it by itself doesn't convey meaning. It doesn't change us. It's the ability to say what it's like that allows for transformation and transmission of meaning. Meta means across, and for means to carry or transfer. So it's the movement or transfer of meaning across from one place to another. And literal meaning is a peripheral, diminished version of the richness of metaphorical understanding. So I mentioned I usually see myself as the donkey in this story. But this year I really became curious about the movement, like what it means that they set Jesus on this unlikely creature who then brought transformation to so many. And I began to wonder about the metaphors that are carrying meaning and transformation for us now. So I wondered if it would be fun this week to kind of try to create a metaphor for your transformation. Like, what's it like? What's bringing change to you now? What does the invitation of your journey feel like? You want to hear mine? So my transformation is like outgrowing my pants. Have you ever had that moment where your favorite thing doesn't fit? Or if you don't, like, it just gets holes in it and you just can't wear it anymore, but you're really, like, reluctant to get rid of it. So you just put it, like, somewhere and save it, you know, but you know you're not going to wear it except around the house. So I resist, like, way, way too long letting it go and getting the new thing because I have to make peace with the ways, like, my body's changing and how the loss of those clothes affects me more than I think it should. So what I do instead is I hold on to the old pants, thinking that if I wear them, the discomfort of wearing them will motivate me to go to the gym and eat less carbs. But I did. I do just buy bigger pants now. And they feel great. Like after I process some body shame stuff and then like months of uncomfortable breathing and... But this is like what my transformation is like. You know what I'm saying? Like on so many levels, the reluctance to trade in pants that no longer work for something new that actually would fit me really well. This is like just a small metaphor, a low bar. But maybe play with that this week. Consider what's a metaphor that gets at what's happening for you. Because as we embrace disruption, and we become curious about the indirect sources of our unfolding, we begin to see how transformation is carried on the back of the unimpressive. It says, as Jesus rode along, people kept spreading their cloaks on the road. Like they were seeing him as a liberating king, entering to take back their city by force, and yet he was on a young donkey, the symbol of peace. And still they hoped and they chanted, blessed is the king who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest heaven. So he's seen as fulfilling a prophecy or a promise that God would not forget them, would someday release them in this life from their oppressors. But some of the Pharisees in the crowd said to him, Teacher, order your disciples to stop. And he answered, I tell you, if these were silent, the stones would shout out. It's as if he's saying the hope being brought is for the whole creation. Even the earth trembles with excitement and would shout out if needed. So I often like have empathy for the Pharisees, because for the Pharisees, this must have been such a weird moment. There was nothing about it that inspired awe or signaled that something spiritual was happening. In fact, for them, this was endangering some of their people. The Roman backlash to anything that slows the machine of empire would be great. And they can't know this yet, but some of the things that seem most problematic to us may be carrying the seeds of our unfolding. There was a recent interview with Jean Vanier, the founder of the L'Arche community for differently abled people. And there are many of them all over the world now. And he was sharing about the wisdom of tenderness in an interview with Krista Tippett. And he shared this story of how St. Francis of Assisi was transformed by the least impressive and most problematic people of his day. Let's take a listen.
It's a very moving thing with St. Francis of Assisi. St. Francis said he couldn't stand lepers. And one can understand the disfigured leper with no nose or no ear or parts of gaping, you know, and in the Middle Ages there was something like in Europe 20,000 leprosiums, you know, and filled with these people that, you know, smelt bad. And he said, I hated it. I couldn't stand it. And then he said that one day the Lord brought me to the lepers. And when I left, there was a new gentleness in my body and in my spirit. What struck me when he said a new gentleness in my body and in my spirit. And it says, from there, I really left to serve the Lord. So Francis, the conversion, when I say the conversion, I'm talking about a change of attitude, because conversion is a change of attitude. It's not just a question of changing religion, all that sort of stuff. It's an inner change. And from the sort of fear and despisal of what appeared the most dirty, which in his period was the smell of the leper, and that, he discovered that there was a presence of God in the leper. So we can then begin to understand the whole mystery of rejection of God, because we don't want a God who's hidden in the dirt or hidden in dirty people or in smelly people or disfigured people or in those people who are in the refugee camps throughout the world and so on.
So good. We reject and don't want a God who's hidden in the dirt or dirty people. This was one of his many, St. Francis's many conversion experiences. He had a change of attitude because of his proximity to that which he despised or made him uncomfortable. He had an inner change from a fear and despisal of what appeared the most dirty, which in his day was the smell of the leper. And it was there he discovered that there was a presence of God. It's pretty amazing. Perhaps for the Pharisees, Jesus was their leper. He was the dirty and smelly one. He was a presence of God, holding the possibility of conversion into gentleness. But all they wanted to do was shut him up. So this week, as we approach Easter, might we become curious about what's converting us into gentleness now? Like, what's interrupting your sense of comfort and control? Might it be the very thing that is breaking you open to deep compassion and love? I want to close this with a story and kind of a poem prayer today that embodies this invitation to stay curious. Long ago, in a country where the mountains are among the world's loftiest, there lived an old farmer and his son. The boy spent his day attending to the work of the farm and their one old horse, a beautiful stallion. After years of careful training, The horse ran swifter and smoother than any other in the region. But one day, father and son awoke to find their cherished animal missing. The son was heartbroken. Neighbors gathered around the two and lamented their great loss. Oh, this is terrible. But the father gazed calmly past the villagers to the surrounding high peaks. We shall see, he said. We shall see if this is good or if this is bad. After a week, the magnificent horse returned, followed by an equally fine wild mare. Father and son soon tamed the new animal. This time, the neighbors praised the old man's remarkable luck. He was now the wealthiest man in town. He owned the two very best horses. Wow. But the farmer simply smiled and remarked, "Oh, of course I'm pleased, but who knows if this is lucky or unlucky? We shall see." And so it came to pass that one day, while racing their splendid horses across the field, the son fell off and broke both legs badly. While the boy's wounds were cleaned and splinted by the doctor, the villagers bemoaned the family's terrible misfortune. But the father, calm as ever, took comfort in his boy. "He's alive, that's all that counts," replied the old man. "His legs will heal in time. I cannot know if these injuries will turn out to be something good or something bad. We shall see." The very next week, a battalion of soldiers marched into the village. A war to the north was underway, and all young men of fighting age were needed immediately. Mothers and fathers gathered food and warm clothes for their boys. With sorrowful goodbyes, they let their sons join the soldiers. But there was one boy in the village, left behind in his bed, for it was obvious that his wounds would take many months to heal. The neighbors envied the farmer's good fortune. Of all the young men in town, his son was the only one not taken to war. The old farmer looked out across the fields at the two fine horses grazing. He looked at the lovely way the sun caught the tops of the jagged peaks in the distance, smiled, and said nothing at all. We shall see. What in your life are you struggling to welcome? And perhaps you're not wrong that this situation or person is a problem. And then when it comes, though, to what it means, perhaps this is the very thing that will break you open to new life. Perhaps it is what will undo you and make space for God's Spirit to remake you anew. We shall see. I'm going to close with the words of the prophet Wendell Berry. The real work. It may be that when we no longer know what to do, we have come to our real work. It may be that when we no longer know what to do, we have come to our real work, and that when we no longer know which way to go, we have come to our real journey. The mind that is not baffled is not employed. The impeded stream is the one that sings. Friends, Vox family, as we move through and move into Holy Week, may we become curious about the pants we're outgrowing, resisting the temptation to ride in on a horse and force meaning, but also releasing our judgments of the smelly donkeys already present. How might gentleness find us in the days to come? We ask all this in the acceptance of the Father, the wonder of the Son, and the tenderness of the Holy Spirit.